Imagine a world where you are finally free and ready to make your way. You want to uplift your family, see what the possibilities of a new life will be for you and your children. Then you are told that the only work available is the same work you did when you were enslaved and on the same farm or plantation. There is a legal contract, but no real wages, only part of the crop from your hard labor. Nothing seems to be different. If you don't sign the labor contract, you could be arrested. You can't leave. You can't negotiate the terms. There is no semblance of fairness, no equal footing with the white landowner. You and your family represent the new slave labor force after the Civil War. This is Dr. Catherine Bankole Medina with The Invention of Racism. The goal of this podcast series is to share the subtle and not so subtle nuances of racism from the past into the 21st century. Understanding and speaking the truth about racism is the first step toward combating and ultimately eliminating it. In this episode, we will talk about another component of the seven pillars of the racist construct, management. Remember, there are seven components which help to explain how racism operates in the world. These seven pillars include dominance, management, containment, intellectuality, humanity, reality, and erasure. Autocratic and strategic management is an important pillar in the methodology of racism. We use the term management as an operating system and an approach to control. In a racial scheme, control is an offshoot of, and at times the equivalent to, dominance. And this control is absolutely necessary. When the system of slavery officially ended as a result of the Civil War and the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the white supremacy that was a signal feature of antebellum society reproduced itself very quickly. For example, the American system of slavery was replaced by sharecropping. This racial management tool ensured that formerly enslaved black people would remain as agricultural laborers for whites. The various arrangements of sharecropping also continued to serve as a form of surveillance and a way to regulate the movement of blacks. The constraints of sharecropping ensured that black people could be easily prevented from voting and political leadership. African Americans were restricted and penalized for seeking independent lives involving the quest for home and business ownership. They were subjected to debilitating Jim Crow laws and demeaning social customs. This management of labor was accomplished through written and unwritten contracts. A South Carolina contract issued in 1867 allowed black workers to labor for wages on the plantation. It was a standard one-year written contract for work on one plantation, but it stipulated that workers also had to labor on other plantations if required to do so. Workers agreed to tasks that outline with specific detail measurements such as the length of ditches and the exact acreage to be cultivated. These workers were required to put in a 10-hour day. Their work began at sunrise, and they could receive up to 2 hours for food and rest, which was conditional. If they were sick and could not work, their wages would be deducted. If they were away from the plantation or committed an offense, they were required to pay fees and fines. If tools or animals were damaged or destroyed, they were charged for it. In this contract, black laborers were required to supervise the animals and other workers. The plantation owner would select a black foreman who would, quote, be in charge of the rest of the freedmen, end quote. And it was the foreman's job to report any problems with the workers, such as being absent, refusing to work, or generally misbehaving. Another charge would be levied daily if the worker performed a task badly. The contract made it abundantly clear that the plantation owner, the employer, benefited from the fines and fees imposed upon the workers. These workers bore other costs, including some of the expense incurred when the plantation owner felt the need to hire extra workers in the spring and the fall. The workers were to receive, quote, justice and kindness, end quote, along with living space and 4 acres to plant grain and vegetables. It was a privilege for them to be given firewood. If they took any firewood beyond this, they would be fined. The contract stated that the workers would receive 1/3 of the crops and 1/3 of the money from cotton, animals, and animal feed. They had access to a cow and chickens to tend to and could be fined if these animals strayed. They were to receive 1 free meal each week. The 1 pound of bacon they received was taken from their wages. They were forbidden to make tools or transport vehicles, such as wagons or carts. The plantation owner was required to keep records of the money the worker owed him from loans and fines. Workers could not sell any of their crops, taken to mean the crops raised on the 4 acres allotted to them, as well as the plantation at large. If the worker was fired, he had to give all of his crops to the plantation owner. Post-Civil War agricultural labor contracts were designed to re-enslave the black population. Workers could not negotiate terms or expect any long-term benefit from the arrangement. The plantation contracts ensured a labor supply and insisted that the owner benefited from a host of fees and fines. It went further to prevent black laborers from profiting from household gardens, including the means to transport this small harvest. While some labor contracts included clauses that made it appear that the black workers would be treated fairly and equitably, as in justice and kindness, in actuality, the contract was what the plantation owner said it was. Black workers told the story of how they owed more money than when they started, even though some could do basic arithmetic and could keep records confirming that they had been cheated. This meant that they would forever be in debt. This managerial control kept black people tied to the land and forced many to flee the cities, including those in the North and West, seeking a better opportunity. Racist management is almost always autocratic and strategic. Sharecropping was a form of controlling and exploiting people, providing a constricted opportunity deemed to be better than nothing. Sharecropping contracts deliberately constructed multiple ways to profit from the labor of black people. Blacks who fled this kind of abuse could be labeled and pursued as criminals. Notably, the assignment of blacks to the position of barnkeeper and foreman meant that the plantation owner could save money by not having to hire white male overseer-type managers. And the practice also relied on the psychological issues associated with respect and resentment within the ranks, which served as an effective divide-and-conquer strategy. The management style of racists is about control. This power is sophisticated and builds upon previous forms of racial oppression. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Support for independent podcasts like The Invention of Racism is so critical at this moment. In the national and global effort to dismantle racism and to establish human equality, we need as many thoughtful and courageous voices as possible. If you believe in and appreciate this anti-racism podcast, continue to download and support us. I also encourage you to use your media platform to honestly analyze, examine, and put an end to racism. And I know you're listening to this podcast, so I know that you know. Discourse on racism is not for the faint of heart. I hope you will join me as I present key topics in The Invention of Racism.